Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Well, next on the line is a man in self-isolation. He is, of course, a footballing legend, the voice of the BBC's Match of the Day, and he's also the face of Walker's Crisps. Gary Lineker, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank God. Gary, what did you make of Jack Grealish's behaviour at the weekend? Is it a Bismarck on his career, or is it something he can overcome?
No, he'll overcome it. It's just young. You've got to remember that football is about young men, and young men make mistakes. I've got four kids of my own in their 20s, they make the odd mistake too. So it's very easy to be judgmental, and obviously he's made a massive mistake. He's been stupid, there's no question about that. He has now apologised, which is the right step as far as he's concerned. And it was, you know, having given out the message by the club about social distancing, then not to adhere to it yourself, is obviously plain daft. He's apologised, and it'll move on, and it'll get forgotten in these times of these very worrying times. So, but yeah, he's made a massive mistake, and I'm sure he's well aware of that now.
I'm sure he is. A massive mistake is right. The Premier League, Gary, there's talk of a World Cup style competition in the summer. Is that a feasible option?
It's hard to see in the summer. You've already considered the Olympics as gone, and that's kind of end of July, early August, wasn't it? Wimbledon, European Championships. The truth is, it's so fluid at the moment. The whole situation is going on, and nobody really knows what's going to happen. Everybody's got kind of theories as to what might happen. I suspect they'll do everything in their powers to finish the season in some way, shape or form. If that means delaying the next season, so be it. The players, of course, won't need probably any kind of rest between the two seasons, if that's the case, because they'd have had a long one during the summer. They've also got to fit in pre-season training, because obviously the players will be, relatively speaking, out of shape, because it does take a few weeks to get into any sort of shape in terms of having to play a proper football match. So there are all sorts of hurdles to overcome. So making predictions is a brave game at the moment for anyone. And I wish I had an answer. I don't, and I wish someone else had an answer. But at the minute, it's so clouded. Who knows?
And if the FA were to suspend it indefinitely, like La Liga, and push it into the summer or into the early autumn, could they axe a competition or two next year to fit everything in?
Well, they can do anything they want, can't they? They could even curtail next season to a degree. I think one of the reasons that they'll want to finish this season is a couple of reasons. A, probably fairness to those that have already participated and who qualifies for the competitions the following season. And also, I'd imagine the legalities of it. And, whether they'll come under any kind of pressure legally if they suddenly just abandon the season. So it's a bit of a minefield, and it largely depends about really when the virus sort of certainly lessens massively and the curve flattens massively, because until that happens, no one can even contemplate getting teams together. So what do you do? You know, you get your team together and a couple of them get it, and then, well, how many have to get it before you can't play? And it's just a can of worms, really. And the truth is, whilst obviously football is massively important to a lot of people's lives, generally here we're dealing with life and death, which is obviously far more important. So football has to take a back seat. Like all other kinds of businesses around the world, it will suffer massively economically. My worry is, people always talk about the wealth in football, but yes, there's wealth in football at the top, but it's the teams lower down, in the ladder that you worry about. A lot of clubs, I think, will really struggle to come out of this. And it's those sides, really, that we should be worried about, not necessarily the completion of one or two of the major tournaments, which I'm sure will resolve itself at some point.
Gary, I completely agree. As a fan of sport. I'd love to see it back, but, you know, health is the bigger picture. But at the same time, there is a part of me that would love to see it finished, and I'm sure there's a part of most Liverpool fans that would like to see it finished as well. And in ways, it's kind of hard to make peace with that, because you want what's best for people, but at the same time, you want your club to win a league.
Yeah, of course, and it is important to people, you know, and understandably so. Nobody needs to feel guilty about admitting that it's important to them. It's fine, and if you were a Liverpool fan, you would be genuinely, genuinely concerned at this point. They've not won it for 30 years. They're miles clear. They're a couple of games away from what was an absolute walk in the park in winning the league. Of course they'll be upset, and totally understandably so. But we're kind of left with no choice anyway. So, you know, sport has just stopped across the planet at the moment. There's nothing going on. And I miss it. I miss covering it. I miss talking about it. And it's, you know, life without sport, sitting at home on Sunday with nothing to watch is, you know, it's boring. But, you know, we're not being asked to go out and fight a war here. You know, we're not being sent away from the homes. We're being asked to stay in our homes, and sports people are being asked to stay in their homes. And that, you know, that is a small price to pay in many ways. There are all sorts of things that will happen because of this virus, in terms of sport and business and life and all sorts of things that dwarf it. But of course, we're allowed to miss sport. Of course we are.
Gary, you mentioned the sacrifices there, and you're right, they're small sacrifices we're being asked to make. But how are you coping? What are you doing? Are you an expert at Jenga, Connect Four? How are you filling the time now?
It's a bit Groundhog Day, I have to say. I mean, I self-isolated about 10 days ago because one of my sons developed some symptoms, that unusual symptoms in the sense that he completely lost the sense of taste and smell. Normally he just loses his sense. No more symptoms than that, and he's still got them now. His youngest son has now developed the same symptoms as that. It is part of symptoms of coronavirus, although it can be part of symptoms of ordinary flu or a bad cold. But they've never experienced that kind of thing in their lives before, so it seems a bit coincidental. But obviously you can't get tested at the moment. I think there's some antibody tests coming out very shortly that they're testing now, which they'll have in much greater numbers than the normal test. So it'd be quite useful for kids like mine to know if they've had it, because then obviously they can go out and do lots of volunteer work. And so anyway, that's my son, my eldest son, George, who's like that. Obviously, then he's back in his place, but because he'd been here quite a bit, I had to take the old self-isolation rules to heart, and got 14 days home alone, which will obviously continue now because we're pretty much in lockdown, except at least I will perhaps be able to get out to the grocers and get myself a few ingredients to cook. So I've been spending my time pretty ordinary day, get it up. I've been in the gym every morning, although I'm lucky enough. I appreciate the fact I'm lucky I've got a little gym. But I managed to put my back out in there this morning, so that'll have to stop for a few days. Then I generally come upstairs, perhaps do a bit of social media, stick some music on. I've been reading a couple of books. I then cook, which is my new passion in life. And I've been putting a bit of stuff out on Instagram with my cooking. Not that I'm a particular expert, but just because a few people did ask for it, and it gives me something to do, and watch plenty of telly and mostly the news, I suppose, and then it's next day repeat and repeat and repeat.
Groundhog Day is a good way of putting it, but I did read one of your tweets where you've nominated Trent Alexander-Arnold as the best right back in the world.
Well, I just saw something this morning. They nominated, I think it was Carvajal, who's obviously a decent enough player at Real Madrid, said, is he the best right back in the world? We're going to put out a few. And I went, no, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't think there's much question. Obviously, there's one or two others. You could say someone like Kimmich, but he's now moved into midfield predominantly for Bayern Munich. Obviously, there were one or two others in this country, you know, Wan-Bissaka and Kyle Walker, to name a couple. And Reece James looks like he's going to be really good as well. And plenty overseas. But what Trent Alexander, he's almost too good to be a fullback, really. His passing range is extraordinary. It's as good as anyone you'll ever see. with the odd exception, maybe someone like Messi or something, or Glenn Hoddle, but not, he's not far off. Extraordinary talent.
And we, as journalists, we're mad for stuff to talk about. We're speculating, we're analysing everything. And in fairness to Harry Kane, last night he did give everybody something to talk about when in his chat with Jamie Redknapp, he said that he might not stay with Spurs forever.
No, and you're quite right. He did give us something to talk about. Understandably so. I think, you know, he's been there most of his career. He's obviously Tottenham man through and through, but you know, there comes a time where you have to make a decision. He's too good a player not to go throughout his career without winning stuff. I think in an ideal world, he'd love that to be with Tottenham. He's made that very clear. But, I mean, I can't, I'm not going to sit here and criticise someone who's thinking of doing stuff that I did myself, you know, whether it's to go abroad. But there'll be a lot of clubs coming for him if he ever does become available. We talked about this. We did a podcast with Alan Shearer and Ian Wright that was originally a podcast, and now they're putting it out in the Match of the Day slot. We're a bit short of stuff. And we were talking about how long we think Harry Kane. We thought we'd probably give it another season. Who knows what another season means at the moment. Everything seems to come back to the coronavirus. But, you know, it's understandable. He's ambitious. He wants to win things. All players do. If he has to move on, he'll have to move on. And there'll be plenty of clubs wanting, that's for sure.
You nominated Leicester City as a club you should join. Was that more so as a fan or in Harry Kane's benefit?
It was a joke, really. Obviously, I don't think Harry Kane will move from Tottenham to Leicester. And we've got Jamie Vardy, but Jamie's, you know, he's 33 now, 32, 33. So, but no, that was Tommy Cheek. Because obviously, if he's going to leave Tottenham, which is one of my former clubs, then I'd like it to be Leicester. But I think it's more likely to be one of the Manchester clubs who could afford him. Possibly Barcelona, as Suarez is, you know, he's kind of getting to the twilight of his career. Benzema, who's no spring chicken anymore at Real Madrid. So there are, you know, options available. And I think there'd be no shortage of people going for him, as long as he gets himself fully back, fit and flying again, obviously.
Gary, we've had a text in. It's a little bit off topic, but it is from one of our listeners for you. And the question is, what would you have done if you'd scored with your hand in 86 and not Maradona?
Well, I could have done, to be honest, with the one near the end. We were 2-1 down. I'd scored one. And then John Barnes, who'd made the first one, did another run down the left and crossed it. And I actually thought I was going to score. I was like 2 yards out. It's a free header and I headed it. And from somewhere, I think it was a Lartica chair, their left back came up from underneath me and hit the back of his head and came out. If I'd have known he was there and I'd could have punched it in, I wouldn't have, though, because do you know why? Because it's not something that would cross my mind to ever do. It's never something that I did in my whole career. You know, in South America and places, they have different kind of upbringing and a different thinking in terms of the game itself. For them, that's cleverness and getting away with something. Yeah. For us, that's cheating. So they view it differently to we do. It's not something I would have ever dreamt of doing. So it's kind of a hypothetical question.
Can you say different upbringing and different careers? You yourself, when you finished playing football, you moved into media, obviously, but you ended up at the forefront of the BBC. Did you ever, or could you have ever seen yourself at the London Olympics, sitting opposite Michael Johnson, discussing Usain Bolt?
Not really. But I certainly was interested in the media side of things, even, you know, in my mid-20s. I remember at the World Cups, I used to sit with journalists. And in those days, that thing sort of happened. And spent a bit of time watching how they wrote their intros. I spent time with the radio people, how they did the stuff. So, you know, it's certainly into my football career that I started to think about the media. I never saw myself as a coach or as a manager, but I did like the media side of it. And I also thought to myself, if I can learn to present as someone that's played at the top level, no one else had really done that. I looked at other sports like Sue Barker in tennis, David Gower in golf, just to mention two off the top of my head, David Gower in cricket, and obviously what Peter Alice and people like that in golf. I just thought in football, we didn't really have that. We had Bob Wilson, but he was a goalkeeper, so that doesn't count. and Jimmy, just joking. And Jimmy Hill obviously did he did some of it, but he was mainly a pundit. And I just thought if I could crack the presenting side of things, it might give me a niche and it might give me longevity, which is, has proved to be the case. So, but I didn't really envisage me hosting, you know, the main gig on the London Olympics. But, you know, things broke for me. I was fortuitous. I have to, you know, it was tough at the start. There were so many times I remember presenting Football Focus on the driving home, thinking I'm never going to be able to crack this. But, you know, then Des left in 1999, and they offered me the job, and I've been very lucky. You know, timing was always an important thing in my life. Timing your runs in all sorts of different ways.
You obviously, you presented the Olympics in 2012, but if you go from there to the World Cup in 14 and the Olympics back in 18, did you find it much different presenting the Olympics than the World Cup? Had you a preference for one over the other?
Well, the Olympics was a one-off. I did it a couple of times early in my career as a kind of just bit part presenter. But because it was London, they wanted me to do it. And it was fascinating. It was just an amazing 2 weeks. But I still feel, after that, I made a decision and I left golf as well, off my own back, both things. And I just wanted to focus on football because that is my passion. That is what I'm most knowledgeable about. And so I thought I'd, as I'm often told to do on Twitter, stick to football. So in that sense, I did. It was brilliant to do at the time, and I'm very glad I did it. But for me, it's football now. I love it.
Gary, you mentioned it there, sticking to football and even timing your run. But it's like when we're chatting about the likes of Jack Grealish, it's having that moral compass you were on about to speak your mind. And you were well able to get off the fence on Brexit and other things like that. Do you think we're lacking that in modern sports people, that they don't have nearly worldly views? They don't speak up on areas they need to lend weight.
But when I was in my 20s, I lacked that too. And, you know, lots of people disagree with my views as well, which they're perfectly entitled to do. I have no problem at all with that. But you've got to remember that footballers and most sports people are very, very young men. Now, if we all think back to when we were very young men, we probably weren't. We didn't think like we did now. We didn't appreciate things like we did now. And we didn't speak out probably on things because we didn't have that strong of views and we made mistakes. And they're young men. They're like 19, 20, 21, and we expect so much of them. They are role models. They're not, you know, that's not why they play football. They don't play football to be role models or spokesmen or to speak out for the greater good. But actually, footballers and other sports, loads of all sportsmen right across the board, they do so much for local communities. It doesn't go reported. They do so much for good causes. Lots of them have done videos and this for the NHS and about coronavirus and raising awareness. But then one player, one young man, makes a mistake and does something foolish. And the whole lot get, everyone says, well, you know, dopey sportsmen, why don't they do more? And it's something that's always irked me to a degree, because I don't think footballers, and in particular, because obviously that's the, you know, the thing that most people care about, or a lot of people care about, they don't really get a fair press most of the time.
I hear, hear. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Gary, thanks a million for taking the time to talk to us. Enjoy the rest of your self-isolation. I hope it's not too groundhoggish for you.
It's fine. I'll be okay. Thank you very much.
Best of luck. Thank you. Game on 2FM.